if push came to shove, like if it really came down to it, we would choose our family every time. No hesitation. I mean, we're here on this podcast. We're talking about building a life where your career and your kids both get to win. And I mean that. I believe that can be for you. But underneath all of that ambition, there's still a hierarchy that none of us are confused about. It's our kids. So then why do we feel so guilty all the time? That's the question I couldn't stop turning over. Because if we're clear on what matters most, where's all this guilt coming from? And is it telling us something true? Or did we just sort of inherit that from somewhere? Today, I'm sitting down with Dr. Laura Froyen, PhD in human development, former family therapist, host of the Balanced Parent podcast. Her whole thing is dropping the stories about what a good parent does and figuring out what actually works for your family. In this interview, we got into true guilt versus borrowed guilt, what kids actually need from us and how much time that really takes, and whether going after your career is quietly hurting your kid's future. If you've ever done the math on how many hours you actually saw your kid this week, then this one's for you. Are you ready? Let's get to it. Welcome to the Ambitious and Balanced Working Moms podcast, your go-to resource for integrating your career ambitions with life as a mom. I'm distilling down thousands of coaching conversations I've had with working moms just like you, along with my own personal experience as a mom of two, and sharing the most effective tools and strategies to help you quickly feel calm, confident, and in control of your ambitious working mom life. You ready? Let's get to it. Well, hello, working moms. I'm very delighted to have a special guest with us on the podcast today. I've never had a parenting coach, somebody that is an expert in talking about parenting in specific. Obviously, something that I talk a lot about with all of you and with my clients, but it's so fun to have somebody that's really has an expertise in this and has a different angle to talk about these things. So I'm just so excited to welcome Laura to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Rebecca.
Yes, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Laura Froyen. I have a PhD in human development and family studies and a specialization in marriage and family therapy, which is lots of words to just say that I love families. I love understanding how family systems work together. I am deeply invested in supporting parents. So I help parents from all over the world have more conscious and respectful relationships with themselves, with their partners, and with their kids. So I teach conscious and respectful parenting. But a lot of the work of that type of parenting really is inner work, learning to how to have a better and more healthy relationship with yourself, a more compassionate relationship with yourself so that you can then reflect that back to your kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, tell us how you define that. So just in case people aren't really aware, but I think you just gave us a good kind of summary. Is there more you would say?
I mean, so like respectful parenting, you know, there's just lots of buzzwords out there, right? So there's gentle parenting, which is not an approach that I super align with just because I think that that can, in the popular teachings, you know, when we see it on social media, can lean more towards permissiveness. And then people say it doesn't work because permissiveness doesn't work. Respectful parenting really as at its core is respecting the dignity and personhood of all beings right from the very beginning and treating children with respect while holding them to the standard of you also being worthy of being treated with dignity and respect. And so there's this beautiful balance of high expectations, crystal clear expectations that are delivered with warmth and love and an understanding of a child's developmental stage and what's appropriate in terms of our expectations. And then conscious parenting is this other thing that's really about deeply examining our ideas, our the lens through which we view children or view ourselves or view situations, really coming into awareness that most of the time our beautiful brain is striving for efficiency and is working on autopilot. And there's lots of stories and lots of ideas and stuff happening in the background. And conscious parenting is about getting off of autopilot and coming into the here and now with your kids, with yourself, so you can actually make choices that align with yourself, with your goals, with your vision for your family, with your values.
Yeah.
As opposed to just saying like, we sit at the dinner table for dinner because that's what people do. Really examining like, actually, why are we sitting down for dinner every night? Why is that important to us? Does it have to be at a table? Does it, do you know what I mean? Like really examining.
Does it have to be home cooked? Does it have to be, all of the things.
All of the things. Really like making conscious choices that are intentional and reflect your goals and your hopes and your dreams and your values.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's so much value in that, and particularly for listeners that listen to this podcast, self-identify obviously as being ambitious. That's part of the title, but other ways of saying that, career focused, career driven, goal focused, kind of type A, those tend to be the type of people, right? And I think, unfortunately there is no, as we all know, no manual to parenthood. And we all sort of wish that on some level. And actually, I think at the end of the day, we probably don't. I mean, but that's all. It would make things easier and more efficient for sure. Yes. But probably we don't at the end of the day. However, I think one of the challenges I see over and over again is that we all sort of live with stories, cultural norms, societal expectations, things like that of what family means and what it means to be a quote good mom. And then that when it comes into actually living into that, when you're an ambitious person and you're career driven, like we can't meet those expectations because typically it means spend more time with your kids and self-sacrifice everything on their behalf. And obviously that doesn't work for us. So
no.
I'm curious. I mean, so that those are really important conversations to have. I'm curious how you start to navigate some of that with your clients.
Yeah. So, a lot of my clients come to me because they're deeply invested in getting parenting right. Right. So
Give me the manual.
Right. Yeah. The manual that many of them are type A. Many of them see parenting as one of like the big things that they're going to do with their lives. Right. And so they, there's ambition when it comes to that too, right? Lots of parents are trying to undo generations of trauma in their families. Lots of parents are trying to do things differently than how they were, it was done for them. And I think across the board, a lot of work is really coming home to yourself, really learning to like say, okay, so is that true? Like, do I have to do it that way? Is that true? Where did I learn that? Like, where did that idea come from? And does it actually jive with
does
what
like serve
I,
me?
Yeah. Does it actually fit with what I know to be true? True for myself, true for my kids, it's funny what we do is not easy. It's not easy to put this into a 15-second soundbite on social media because it's nuanced and it's individual.
Totally. Totally. I'm really just curious. That's popped in my head. Do you have like a personal kind of definition for yourself or one that you see commonly for your own clients as you start to dig into some sort of like, what does good mean to me?
Yeah. I mean, so that's part of my work with parents is defining that individually. So how will we know when we've been successful, right? So what does that even mean to us, right? So for me personally, with my kids, I have long-term goals, so like when they're 20 or 30, they want to call me, they want to hang out with me, they trust me with their kids. They want to have good, authentic relationships where we can handle the ups and downs. We can have a disagreement, see things differently and we still respect each other. You know, I have those long-term visions on a day-to-day basis. I want to feel peaceful in my home. I want to feel like we're connecting in some way that's meaningful for each kid each day. You know, that doesn't have to look how in my home, how it would look in your home, right? So for some people, we think like, gosh, we've got to read to our kids every night before bed and do this bedtime routine. That might not be exactly how that individual child needs to be connected with. Maybe they, you know, maybe their bedtime connection point before they go to sleep needs to look different, you know? And so it just is, it's very individual. So yes, like there's this process of picking out what does being a good mom mean to me, just like I'm sure with your clients, you go through that process of what does success mean to me?
Yeah.
You know, it's a very similar process just with the family.
And it needs to be somewhat holistic. I mean, I think that that's where it, for us as working moms, it's important that our definition feel like it fits into the life that we want. It's realistic, right? Because when we become working moms, you know, our goals really shift. And it's not just about career. It's also about feeling like you're showing up as a parent in the way that you want. Because if you don't, then it feels like everything is failing, right? And so at the end of the day, if you were absolutely 100% forced to pick between your family and your career, we know that all of us would pick our family if we absolutely had to, whatever that extreme situation would be. However, that isn't, generally speaking, where we're at in life. We get to have both. And so how do we navigate both? You know, how do we navigate both well is, and what does that even mean to do it well and do both well is such an important like step back, and let's put some definition to it. I want to steer us though in another direction, because I think that this is where a lot of guilt comes in for working moms. Obviously I talk about guilt a lot, and I have, you know, my own kind of thoughts on guilt, but I'm curious what are some of your thoughts on how we start to like frame up kind of mom guilt and what that means and what does it look like?
Yeah. So one of the things that I talk about with my clients and in my membership a lot, actually, because the guilt comes up, we all feel it, is really differentiating between true guilt and like borrowed guilt, right? So a moment of true guilt is when you've taken an action that doesn't align with your core values, right? Where you've intentionally done something that doesn't align with those with your core values, which you believe to be good and true and just, right? And borrowed guilt tends to be where you have done something that maybe does align with your values, but doesn't necessarily align with someone else's value, someone else's shoulds that they've put on you, right? And so if you're feeling that sense of guilt, you have to take a look at yourself and really think about, okay, so is this a moment where I've stepped outside of my values, or am I actually living in my values and I need to do some work on how other people's values or, you know, obligations or their thoughts on what I should be doing are seeping in. And then what do I have to do with that? You know, how do I help myself understand that better or differently? How do I have boundaries with myself psychologically, like mentally, to keep those from coming in? How do I treat myself gently and with compassion? Because we do live in the world, right? We live in the world. We hear all of these messages. We have mother-in-laws who think things about us, or, you know, neighbors down the street who are doing things differently. And that noise can come in and it can be really loud, right? And it's hard. And so there's a piece of protecting ourselves from it, being kind to ourselves in the midst of it, and then being really honest with ourselves around, like, if this is a moment where I'm feeling guilty because I actually am doing something that doesn't feel aligned, and what does that shift need to be? Do you know, so that I can be more in alignment and feel good about my choices? Do you know?
Yeah,
what?
Yeah.
I don't know if that is helpful at all.
No, I think that's a really interesting way of thinking about it. I mean, I remember when I had my daughter, she's 11 turning 12, and I felt absolutely like at true deep guilt for leaving her at daycare. And just I am sending my child off to be raised by somebody else, right? She was an amazing, wonderful sleeper. Love that for her and for us in so many ways. But literally, I would spend about an hour with her most days because she would go to sleep at like 5:45, and like, which is amazing, you know, but yeah, not for me who didn't spend any time with her, you know? And so
that must have been really hard, Rebecca.
It was really, really hard. And I was so confused, you know, it's so confusing to kind of come up with like, am I really, like to your point, is this really a lot? Am I really doing something that doesn't feel aligned? Or is this, am I feeling guilty because society tells me that I shouldn't be dropping my child off at daycare and that somebody else is raising them and there's a problem with that, you know? I don't know. And then what piece of that is guilt and what piece of that is just like pure sadness? Because that's different too.
Yeah.
It's okay to, you know, it was okay for me to feel anything really, but it felt legit to feel sad that was the circumstance of the time. But that's also very different than guilt, and having to like differentiate between those two was really challenging during that time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and so just, you know, I guarantee you're not the only person listening.
Oh my gosh. I know that.
And there are moms who are listening right now who are literally in that place right now too. And, you know, the research is overwhelming that if your child is in high quality care, parents continue to be the most impactful on kids' development, even if they're in full-time daycare. So even in that amount of time that you're at home with them, you're still the most important person in their lives. And the other interesting, attachment science continues to grow, and our understanding of babies continues to improve. And, you know, human beings are not supposed to do this alone, right? So this is why like moms are like, find your village. You know, we get told this all the time, but literally children are biologically programmed to form 4 primary attachments. So many babies are kind of artificially growing up in a 2 caregiver household when human babies are intense babies. They have a very long infancy, a very long sensitive period when they are pretty, you know, they need a lot. They're meant to be raised by more than just 2 adults. And so there's this piece of it too that like, you know, and you know, when it comes to a place like daycare, they will form relationships that can be robust and really healthy and ultimately are good for them over time.
Yeah. So hold on. I want to just park on that. I want to make sure everybody heard that. Your child is not meant to just attach to you and your partner if you have one, right? Your child is ideally has 4.
Yeah.
4 humans, 4 adults, loving, trusted adults that they've attached themselves to in infancy. That's the healthiest thing for them.
It's wonderful for them to have.
Why is that actually?
I mean, because they're vulnerable beings, right? They're very vulnerable beings. I mean, you think about how maybe humans were, as a species were kind of coming to be, we would be in vulnerable situations. Humans had babies near the same time. Mothers shared care while they were out, you know, doing things. You would nurse other people's babies. Like just biologically, we're just designed to help each other out, you know, and culturally, it's very modern and very recent and very Western for us to live in single family homes, right? For us to not live in multi-generational homes. They're, you know, babies, the human animal that a baby is expecting to be in a place where there's more than 2 adults to care for it, because it's a very intense
season of its life. Yeah.
They're just needy infants. There's very few other mammals that come out into the world with such a prolonged infancy and period of development where they are, you know, vulnerable and need a lot of support.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly told this story on the podcast, but before, but I, you know, there was a moment that shifted for me. when she was a little bit older. I don't remember how old, but I'm going to say, I don't know, somewhere in like the 13 to 15 month range. And I was changing her diaper and at home, and she like mooed or something. Like she said, she did an animal noise of some kind. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know she could do that. And I remember like, I ran to my husband and I'm like, did you know that she can like moo like a cow? And he was like, no. And I was like, did you teach her that? I was like, I didn't teach her that. And he's like, no, I didn't even know. And then it was like, oh my gosh, she's learning things and being influenced by these beautiful caregivers that she, in the daycare that she's at, in a way that I didn't even know that I could be developing in her. And it was like a light switch. It was like the guilt immediately went away because I had this completely different perspective all of a sudden of what she gained from that experience. And it changed everything for me in that moment.
Rebecca, I just want to highlight too, just for the listener and maybe even for you, you know, Rebecca from, you know, 10 years ago, not everybody would have that experience, right? And so then that's the power of your mindset, right? That's the power of really carefully interpreting the things, right? Because another person could see that and be like, oh my God, she's learning things without me, as opposed to seeing it, oh my God, she's learning things without me. Like, you know, like there are multiple ways to see every situation, right? There's multiple ways to interpret them. And your beautiful, powerful brain allowed you to see that for the gift that it was for your child, for you. And allowed that guilt to melt off. But that is also something that for a person who's listening, that they can choose. You can actively choose that interpretation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's really powerful. It's really powerful. It's really powerful. I mean, and it really was like an instantaneous, felt like an instantaneous shift. And I remember it so wildly. And all of a sudden dropping her off felt differently. And like my whole experience of it felt. Now that doesn't mean that I still didn't feel sad. I still really longed to be with her more. And ultimately it's why I left that job and, you know, made other choices because it was not aligned with the bigger vision of what I wanted, but it was different. You know, those choices were different. And they felt very empowered because of the work I had done to sort of decide and cast vision over the values, who I wanted to be as a parent, how I wanted that to fold into my career and all of the various things that came with that. But I'm wanting to kind of shift again and think a little bit about what another area that I think is really challenging for ambitious women is the self-care and me time. Like it's one thing to feel like, I mean, you got to work, right? The family needs the money. This is like, you could justify potentially the what you feel and the fact that you're away for 8 to 10 hours a day doing work, but then you're supposed to be home and be with your kids. Like that's what you're supposed to do. And so the me time or the self-care, you know, is by far the number one thing that gets falls off of the schedule, because we're supposed to be with our kids. And I'll never forget a client I worked with that she just felt she just wanted to work out on like a Saturday morning without her three young kids. And she felt so guilty for having to leave them once again to go do this thing for her. And then she felt guilty that she was leaving three kids that were like under the age of three. They were really young with her husband and was like, they're a handful. And then I'm making him take care. She couldn't, you know, it was really challenging to get over this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really common for women.
I think so too.
If they have young kids to be able to move through that. So I just want to open up a conversation around some of that.
I'm curious, you know, in those scenarios, it's so easy to look at what you would be missing out on, what the kids are missing out on if you go, right? If you go and do the self-care thing. I feel really curious, you know, what a listener or a client in this situation would be able to list on what their child is gaining by seeing their mom do those things, right? So thinking, it's our brains are always looking for the lack, what's missing, you know, looking for things, right? Because they're trained, the brain is trained to look for threats, right? Not necessarily tasked very often to look for the positives, but it can learn to do that, right? So making a list of what your kids will gain by seeing your mom go to that Saturday morning yoga class, carving that time out. I will tell you a funny story from my childhood. And this is like, I don't know that my mom intended to do this, but she taught me very clearly how important self-care was through modeling as a mom. She was a teacher. She worked hard. My dad had three jobs, so he was working really hard. And she would get a magazine once a month. And when it came, she would play a game with us where she pretended she was in Australia. And this was the 80s. There was not international phone calling, right? So she would say, okay, I'm in Australia. You cannot talk to me. If you need something, you can write me a postcard and it'll get here in a week, you know?
Oh,
and she would lay down in the couch in the middle of the house and read her magazine, and no one was allowed to talk to her. Very clear boundary. She made it playful when, you know, she was like, when we were little, but you know, and she used that boundary in a lot of different ways when she like really needed no one to talk to her. And that was something that for her, for self-care, solitude and peace was really important to her. She needed it. She made it playful. She made it fun, but she taught me very, very clearly from a young age that it is okay to carve out time for myself, that it is okay to have interests that are my own, that have nothing to do with my kids. It was a beautiful thing that I had modeled for me that I didn't then have to go learn as a parent, right? And so one of the things that we can think about ourselves doing is rescuing our kids from having to learn this painful lesson in the future by modeling this now, right? Because it is painful. It's a painful lesson to learn that, like, hey, wait a second, I matter myself as a woman. Like I've been a woman for years, and I will continue to be a woman for years. I'll always be a mom now too, but I will be myself. There will be, you know, we get them for a short amount of time, and then there will be this other time. And I don't want to have to re-meet myself after they're gone. I want to stay connected to myself while I'm here. It's just it's a very powerful lesson to model for our kids.
Yeah.
And
I'd probably even go further and say, like, for our daughters.
I mean, daughters,
I hate to be that, you know, that sort of binary in it on some level, but I can't tell you how many, you know, moms I talk to say, you know, my husband doesn't struggle with this.
He does not.
He checks out. Like, he like literally is like,
he
is selective hearing to anything. And I'm over here slaving away. And, you know, and then we can get into this whole like relational dynamic. But men don't, we've conditioned men differently, very differently. And so the modeling that we can do for our daughters in specific, or if you're a boy mom, the fact that you're modeling that for them and their partners potentially in the future, you know, all of that matters.
And even the modeling the discussion of, you know, so my husband is a golfer, right? And golf,
so is mine. Takes up all day.
It's all day.
All day.
Yes, all day. We live in Wisconsin too. So, he's a ice fisherman in the winter. That's his, day. Is it also all day?
All you know,
and
day.
So, right. And so like modeling the conversation of, okay, so you're going golfing. I'm so glad, you know, that you're doing that. I'm so glad you got a tee time. It's wonderful for you. And tomorrow I'm doing X, Y, and Z. You know, tomorrow I'm going thrifting with my friend. You know, tomorrow I'm taking an art class. You know, whatever it is for you. Modeling that conversation between parents in front of kids. All right, so kiddos, daddy's going to be golfing today. And then tomorrow mommy has her art class. You know, like model that negotiation. Model, you know, so my husband has been very busy this summer. He hasn't gotten on the golf course. And so, and that's not good for him. That's not good physically for him. That's not good for him mental health wise. And so having my kids hear me say, Dad, you have not golfed. I haven't seen you go on the golf, like go golfing in weeks. You have to get out there this week. How can we make that happen? Where like I'm guarding his time so he can have it. And he does the same thing for me. Or I haven't seen you do your art in a while. Like, how can we make that happen? Those are good things to model in terms of partnership for your kids too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So good. I have actually no idea what you're going to say to this next question. So I'm really curious. This is one of the things that's coming up because we're talking about kind of shifting maybe societal expectations and things like that. I think there's another, and we've talked about that now with guilt, and we've talked about that with self-care. I think that there's kind of this sort of belief that on some level that kids raised by a working mom, there's more, I'll just say it's not as good as being raised by if they had a stay-at-home mom. And I'm curious, I think there's definitely a subset of listeners, clients that have to wrestle with this. There's a lot of women that were raised by stay-at-home moms that don't want to be a stay-at-home mom and then want to be a working mom. But then the immense amount of like breakdown of what does it mean to be a good mom happens. But I'm really curious from like a statistical standpoint or like research standpoint, if you have any sort of data, whether it's specific numbers or just thoughts on it around just that.
Oh gosh, I feel like I should have done my Google Scholar search on this beforehand.
That's okay.
I don't, off the top of my head, I don't have any hard data. I do know that kind of in generalities, and when we think about child development research and psychological research in general, we are talking about generalities, right? We're talking about, on average, this is what the research tells us. On average, this is what we found. And usually they're in terms of child outcomes, as long when we are thinking about high quality care, both at home and in care settings and in school, there's very little difference between children who've had working parents and who have been in care versus kids who are raised at home. Very little difference. Statistically, can't usually tell between those kids if you don't know. So there's that piece of it that's important to note. What the research does tell us over and over again, though, is no matter how much time your kids spend in care or spend in school, the parents are still the most important and impactful adults in a child's life, for good or for ill, right? And so sometimes a high quality care situation can buffer a less than ideal parenting situation for a child. But over and over again, research tells us that parents are important and parents matter more than what's happening in the hours that a child is in care or in school. And so to me, that tells me that we matter and we're important no matter how our family structure is. And I also, just historically, having a stay-at-home parent, again, in human history, is very new. Like, I think about my mom who was, grew up on a farm in northern Iowa. Did her mom have a job outside the home? No, but her mom was a working mom. A farmer's wife is a working mom.
Yeah, yeah.
So the privilege that comes with having a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
It's very recent. And mom, it's this thing that like, where did we get this idea? Huh. Right. I think that there's a little classism that comes in with this idea too.
Sure. Sure.
I don't know. Human history, it's very recent.
Yeah. It's true. It's true that, as you think about it in that way, like the thing that comes to mind is like the 50s, right? And that really wasn't all that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago. In terms
of human history, right?
In terms of how long humans have been on this planet.
Right.
That was a very small amount of time ago.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and humans have been thriving for a long time.
For a long time. So if it really is the parent that has the biggest impact on the kids, then what would you say the parent should be working on to be able to develop their to grow humans in the way that they want? To raise humans in the way they want.
So when you are home, be home, be present, right? Unplug to the extent that you can, and find ways to be fully present with the kid that's in front of you, right? With the child, who they are, not who you think they should be, and not who, like, in the way that you think it was supposed to be, right? So if you, you know, loved playing catch with your dad on the weekends, and you end up with kids who are not going to play catch with you, you're going to have to find something else to do that is your version of catch.
Yeah.
Right. So, but be present, be with them, get to know them.
On a side note of that, like my kid right now, my son who's 9 is really into, a like computer game that he's recently found. And we're kind of just venturing into a little bit of the video game side of things. I have a love-hate relationship with more hate than I do love in this. So there's a lot of restrictions and things, but we're kind of like, dipping our toe in and seeing what happens. But he's somewhat obsessed with talking about it, right? And so he will come to me, it'll be like, and he's like such the morning person. He'll like come into my room and I'm barely awake. And he'd be like, Mom, let me tell you about like how my game went yesterday. I'd be like, yeah, buddy. Tell me, yeah, I want to hear all about it. Tell me all about it. And then he goes on a, you know, 5-minute like explanation. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's super interesting. I have zero interest in this.
Yes, zero interest.
Zero yes. interest in this. And every piece of me is like, I hate that my son is talking about this right now. And it's what he's interested in. And
yes.
So I care more about like listening in and asking questions and like, tell me more. And because I know that he feels connected when I do that. And that matters more to me than the fact that I care about
him. He feels seen and heard and valued.
Yes.
Yes. And so, yes, there's absolutely times where we are just going to have to suck it up and play Legos when Legos are not our thing, or, you know, do the thing and there's also room for finding shared interests with your kids. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I'm an artist, one of my kids is definitely an artist. We find that shared time together while we're doing art. My other kid that's not so easy to slip into for her with me, We volunteer at the Humane Society together. That is our time where I really pour into her. She feels seen and heard and valued. So you don't have to have everything in common with your kids. And not everything has to be like you coming to them. You could finding a place where you can connect together, where you can have that little bit of shared interest. I don't know that I would ever have thought to volunteer at a Humane Society, but I love volunteering. I have my whole life.
I love that.
It feels really good pouring into my community alongside my daughter, who's passionate about animals and their welfare. Find those things. And get creative. And, honestly, for me, like, I've also loved stacking my self-care with those moments. So if I need to get out and move my body, going for a bike ride with my kids feels great. So lovely. You know, if I need to do some art, getting out art supplies and making sure that like my kid friendly art supplies are next to me, because one kid will just definitely just float over to me, you know, and then we're connecting and I'm still getting my self care. Do you know what I mean? Like those are finding those ways is so important.
Yeah. Yeah. And that things don't have to be totally boxed. This time and this time, there's like can be a blend between those things to make the time happen. Mm-hmm. So good.
The other thing too is that it can feel sometimes when both parents are working outside of the home, and you feel like you have a small amount of time together. There's always a lot to do, and so I have found it helpful for me because my husband's a professor. I'm working. I have found it helpful to plan for some days where we really have nothing to do, where we're not overscheduled, where the kids aren't overscheduled with their activities, where we're not like, okay, unload the dishwasher, clean, you know, put away your laundry, you know, like, because I know that there's always something to do. But finding at least one day a week where in the evening we got nothing on our schedule, we can just chill, we can do a puzzle,
watch
a show, you know, like all of those things, like can. Maybe, you know, maybe it's normally my kid's job to unload the dishwasher, but I don't want to have to be a taskmaster all the time. So I'm going to do that today so that we have, you know, that done. We can load the dishwasher after dinner and we can have some time together afterwards instead of having to do all the things, you know. It's good. That's balance, right? So like that's what balance is. And teaching that to your kids, saying like, ah, you know what? Morning Laura might be mad at me, but evening Laura needs a break, you know, so yeah. I'm not going to fully clean the kitchen. I'm going to sit down and snuggle with you while you're, you know, reading your manga book to me. You know what I mean?
Totally. Like
finding places where that can happen too.
Yeah, I love it. So coming back to the question, which was really like, if we know that the two parents are the most influential piece.
Oh, right. That was our question.
That was the original question. That the influential piece of raising good humans. We know presence is really important, really, truly giving them your presence and unplug. That does not mean, let me just be clear, when I start to talk to my clients and I'll say like, well, what's your kid focus time? They'll say, well, from 5 p.m. until 9 p.m. when they go to sleep. I'm like, no. You are not focused on your kids for 4 hours. There is a very small fraction where you are literally giving them your undivided attention and your presence. Like, but you need some time. Doesn't have to be a long period of time. It could be 10 minutes, could be 20
10 minutes. 10 minutes a day per kid.
Otherwise, what you're doing is actually making dinner and cleaning up the house and they're in your presence, but you're not present with them, right? So just to be clear, as we talk about that, they need some undivided attention. They also need to know that you're interested in them. So finding connection to the things that they're interested in is really important. And modeling more than anything else, like what you want for them as they get older, whether that's self-care or health or following your own interests or whatever it would be, like that's another piece of raising good humans. So, I mean, I'm sure we can keep going and going on this.
They also need boundaries, right? So they also need rules and expectations that you're going to follow through on. I think that is something that can be missed in a conversation like this, because it sounds all like,
I'm going to go off and do that.
But
yeah.
Like, you know, when we say you can watch one show and it's bleeding into the third show because you didn't follow through, you're teaching something there about follow through. You're teaching, you know, and so having a relationship with boundaries, with expectations.
That's all about you too. So if you don't know how to turn off the show for yourself after the third show or the ending endless delayed, yes, right? You're going to have a really hard time putting that boundary up for your children as well.
Absolutely. Yes. So, yeah, absolutely.
Which comes back to one of the very first things you said around conscious parenting, you know, being conscious of your own, of yourself and what matters to you and your own values and how that then, you know, is modeled out. So,
yeah. And it all informs everything. So learning to come home to yourself is so important.
I feel like we could keep talking and talking and talking. So much good stuff here. I wanted to get into a whole like screen time thing. We just don't have time, unfortunately. So maybe you're going to have to come back and we'll talk about that.
Sure. Yeah. Happy to.
How can people be connected to you, follow you, if they want to take that next step?
Yeah. So I have a podcast called The Balanced Parent, where we talk about, you know, respectful, conscious parenting and relationships. And then I have a website.
I was on that.
You were a beautiful guest. And then I have, my website is laurafroyan.com. I have a membership where we get together and hang out. Most of my members are navigating life with at least one spirited or neurospicy child. So if you've got one of those intense kiddos, come join us. We'll be in good company.
So good. And we'll put all of the links to that in the show notes as well. Thank you, Laura, for being here. It's just such a pleasure to have you and to pick your brain a little bit. Because at the end of the day, we choose our families, right? That's really is it. And so we want to equip you to be able to do that, you listeners, well, and to feel like you can truly have both. That's what we're all about here. Being ambitious and balanced at the same time. So thank you again.
And
yes, of course. All right, working moms, till next week, let's get to it. If you wake up most days spinning with 100 different priorities vying for your attention, then the daily kickstart is exactly what you need. It's a simple 6-step process that helps you get your thoughts out of your head, reset your mindset, and refocus on what actually matters. It's designed to help shift you out of overwhelm and into calm, confident action before the chaos hits. This daily practice is the same tool I offer to all my clients and it's going to show you exactly how to lead your day instead of react to it. It takes just 10 minutes a day, and the impact will ripple through everything: your mood, your energy, your presence with your kids, and how you lead at work. My clients indicate time and time again that this tool was the one that made the biggest difference for them, and I'm offering it to you totally free. You can download it by going to www.ambitiousandbalanced.com/daily-kickstart. And of course, I'll have that for you in the show notes as well. All right, working moms, let's get to it.